WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Hello, everybody. This is WVUA 90.7 FM, the Capstone, and welcome to episode number 35 of the Full Court Press Podcast. My name is Jamie Martinez, and I'm joined by Alex Chasen and Nick Atkinson. On today's episode, look forward to league news and our FCP end of the regular season awards show. Yes, our MVP will be announced. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at FCPpodcast_UA and on TikTok at FCP_podcast. With that being said, let's get into it.
I think this is the first time we are in the studio on a Monday, but we are here this week providing three shows. The one that came out today on Monday, this one, you'll be hearing this on Wednesday, and then Friday, which will be our playoff predictions. So a big week for us, but it's going to be very exciting. Let's jump into it, though. April 9th, that was yesterday. The regular season ended. The stage is now set for the play-in and the sixth seed, obviously up to the first seed in the playoffs. The play-in starts tomorrow. So that means yesterday for the listeners, Tuesday, April 11th, all the way to Friday, April 14th, the NBA play-in tournament will be commenced. And then April 15th, the NBA playoffs begin. But like I said, the stage is set, and let me talk about it a little bit. We don't need to talk about the 1-6 seed. That'll be when we do the playoff predictions and everything else that goes into it. Obviously, that is also easily researchable. But I want to talk about the play-in. Let's predict the play-in, because yes, this will be on Wednesday. The first play-in games are on Tuesday, but there are still play-in games on Wednesday and Friday. So let's talk about the play-in for a second. My predictions are in the East. Let's start off in the East. For that 7th seed, the Heat versus the Hawks, I'm going to have to go with the Miami Heat in this one. I think the Atlanta Hawks, this whole season, it has kind of been a little bit of turmoil, not really, you know, leading up to expectations. They're actually fallen expectations. So have the Miami Heat. Don't get me wrong. They have definitely fallen to expectations. They should be probably a top 4 seed from the beginning of this season if you were going to. That's probably what most of us said. I think I actually said they were going to be the first or second seed when I was looking at my, you know, November or like October predictions of what the season was going to look like. But with that said, give me the Miami Heat. How about you guys?
I'm taking the Heat in this one. I just think they stack up way better against the Hawks. And I think they want to come out for revenge and beat up on the Celtics in that first round. So I think they have a lot of motive going into the first round, and I can see them sweeping everybody here.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I definitely got to go with the Heat as well. Moving on to that, for that battle of the 8th seed, we have the Raptors versus the Bulls. They both have to win 2 games. So whoever wins this game ultimately, well, in our vote, they'll be playing the Atlanta Hawks or Miami Heat, but let's just stick with the Hawks. Raptors versus Bulls. Who do you think wins this game? I think it's going to be a toss-up. This is going to be probably one of the better playing games, but I'm going to go with the Raptors just because I think their defense hasn't been great all year, but they are known to have good defense past years, and it's the same players that have been known to have good defense, so I think they'll do it when the time comes. How about you, Jamie?
I think I'm going to take Chicago in this one. It's going to be really close, but I think Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan, it's finally time to turn up, and I think Patrick Beverley is going to bring a whole new attitude to that playoff roster, so I'm going to take Chicago in a close one.
I'm going to take Toronto for sure. Just, you know, they have a lot of – they have actual, you know, finals experience, so yes. I'm going to take them.
I agree with that. So that leads on to the next question. For me and Nick, I guess, Raptors versus Hawks. That one, Nick, where are you going to go with that?
I'm taking the Raptors, too.
Interesting.
Atlanta just has no experience whatsoever. They're already putting
they made it to the conference finals.
But that's just Trae Young and John Collins. Everybody else is off the team. Oh, and Clint Capella. Everybody, and DeAndre Hunter. So, like, 4 players from that existing team are on the team still, or maybe, like, 5 or 6. And then the rest of the guys were on non-playoff teams, like DeJounte Murray, Sadiq Bey, players like that. While Toronto has won a championship with this core, minus Lowry and Leonard. So I got to just take Toronto
valid,
in this game.
Valid points. I don't know. I got to go with Atlanta. I can't see them. It's going to be a home game for them. And I can't see them dropping 2 play-in games. I can't see it. So I'm going to go with Atlanta. So for me, the 7th and 8th seeds, my prediction are going to be the Miami Heat, and then the 8th seed will ultimately be the Atlanta Hawks. Now, Jamie, Bulls versus Hawks. Where do you go?
I'm taking Chicago in this one. I just think they're a mean group of guys. Patrick Beverley's going to get in Trae Young's head, and I think I'm going to go with the Bulls in this one just because they've been hot in the last month or so, and I can see Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan turning into something different for the playoffs. So I think my 7 and 8 seed would end up being the Heat and the Bulls.
Moving on to the West, Lakers versus Timberwolves. And the Timberwolves we'll touch on in a minute when we get into a little bit more of the news, but Lakers versus Timberwolves, I think this is very easy. I'm going with the Lakers. They're going to get that 7 seed. How about you two?
Yeah, I'll take the Lakers.
I'm going to take the Lakers, unfortunately. I can see the Timberwolves pulling something off.
Yeah, I could see it.
If Anthony
see
Edwards and Karl Anthony Towns really decide to turn up, but I think if everybody plays like they have been throughout the season, I think the Lakers will take this one.
I agree. And then for that 8 seed, or, you know, moving on to that 8 seed. They're going to have to win two games. But Pelicans versus OKC, I'm going with the Thunder. Pelicans are without Zion, and it came out. I was actually going to touch on this in a minute, but I'll touch on it right now since we're talking about the Pelicans. They don't think he's anywhere even close to getting back on the floor, and obviously not these playoffs. So that's not good news for the Pelicans and Zion Williamson. That was per Shams Charania. So I'll touch on that right now. So for that reason, I'm going to go with OKC. And even we already knew he was going to be out, I would still lean towards OKC because the Pelicans, they have B.I., CJ, but I think the Thunder are hungry to get one win. I don't think they're going to get that 8 seed. You'll hear about it in a second. But I think they're hungry to get a win, and I think they can do it against a hurt Pelicans team.
I'm going to go with the Pelicans here just because they have a lot of depth and a lot of good pieces around them. Brandon Ingram, a former All-Star, we know what he could do. But then you also have great guys like Herb Jones, Jonas Valanciunas, who could do their thing. And I think just from 1 to 13, I like the Pelicans roster a little bit more. OKC, if they do lose, I don't think it's that big of a deal just because of the 10 seed. Nobody expected them to be here, and they have a very young roster. So I think the Pelicans are going to be slightly hungrier just because they have a lot of vets out there.
Yeah, I'm going to take New Orleans, too, just because of what they were able to do in the play-in last year. They took a couple games off of Phoenix last season in the postseason, so I think that they're going to want to get back to that spot because, yeah, they said that, I mean, yeah, it's a speculation that Zion might not return.
He's not.
But
it was per Shams.
I mean, I don't know. I don't take any
of the
Shams. I don't either, so I take that with a grain of salt.
Shams disrespected the Kings. I don't
and
trust
he said Westbrook wouldn't have a spot in the NBA, so he didn't. His opinions to me are just.
Woj is the only one that matters to me.
Nothing to
me. All right. Well, with that said, for that 8 seed, then, it would be Timberwolves versus OKC, and that's where the OKC journey ends quickly. I have to go to Timberwolves. There's no way they're not going to beat OKC. Is it possible? Yeah, especially with the world they're on right now, especially with the news today, which I'll touch on in a second. But with that said, I still think Anthony Edwards and Towns are going to overpower Oklahoma.
Then Gobert will be back, too.
What?
Gobert will be back. He's only on a one-game suspension.
Still.
I don't care how much you don't like him. He still has.
I don't like him. They don't like him. So I mean, what are you gonna? You know, they don't have any good chemistry. It's not me that doesn't like him. They obviously don't like each other. So I don't know how well that would work out. But with that said, I still say either way they're gonna win. I believe in my opinion. But then for you two, that would be the Pelicans versus the no.
Yeah, it'd be the Pelicans Timberwolves.
Pelicans versus Timberwolves. Where
I'm
would you go?
Taking New Orleans.
That's a tough one because these are two teams that I thought were going to be like the 1 and 2 seed going into October just because of how stacked their rosters were. And now we're looking at it in a completely different perspective in the play-in. So I just think because of the whole Timberwolves controversy with Rudy Gobert, Kyle Anderson, and then McDaniels breaking his wrist, punching a wall, I'm going to take New Orleans in this one. They slide into the playoffs.
For Nick?
No, yeah, I'm taking New Orleans easily.
Moving on to, we touched on this a little bit over the weekend on Monday's podcast, but the Mavericks, you know, they lost their second-to-last game against the Bulls, and that loss got them out of the play-in. Obviously, they're not in the play-in tournament, as we all know. We just went through the play-in tournament. But I wanted to touch on this. That's something we didn't touch on before is no Kyrie, and I don't know if it was personal reasons or an injury. I believe it was an injury. But still, when you're fighting for your playoff lives, you think that little injury you got, you think you can push that aside for a second. And also, Luka Doncic only played 13 minutes in the first half. He didn't play the second half. Why is that? Why did they just give up? You know, why did they not try to find that play? And also, Kyrie Irving also decided to decline an exit interview with the Dallas media yesterday. So that's a little bit of later news, but let's touch on the first part. Why did they just give up? Why did they sit Kyrie? Because I'm sure his injury wasn't that major, obviously. We would know if it was that major. And why did Luka only play the first half when they were fighting for their play-in lives? They could have made the play-in if they won that game. Why do you think they gave up?
I don't know. I think it's just tank time.
No, you don't tank because you don't get a good pick anyways.
I just don't think, even if they make it, I don't see them beating anybody in this because they would have replaced OKC, and I don't see them beating Minnesota, New Orleans, and L.A.
I know, but you still have you made that trade for Kyrie. That just makes no sense. You're not going to fight your hardest because you made that trade. You gave up so much. Why wouldn't you try to fight to even get into the play-in?
You can't ask me. You got to ask Jason Kidd.
No, I know, but
I'm as dumbfounded as you are.
I know, but that's why I'm asking. What do you think?
Oh, it's... I don't even know at this point. They're just done with everything. I think they've seen enough from that core and just want to pack it up and move on.
What do you think, Nick?
Yeah, I agree with that to an extent. I just think that they were just ready to end the season and move on. So I mean,
because nothing was really going their way to begin with. I believe they went 8-16 once they got the trade from Kyrie. And I don't think this is all Kyrie's fault because they were nothing special before the trade deadline. He just didn't help, and I just think Kyrie and Luka. I don't think they liked each other. I mean, that's a trend with Kyrie, you know, ever since he went to Boston and beyond. He's had troubles that we've talked about on the Monday's podcast. But with that said, I don't know. It's interesting because they were fighting for the playoff lives, and I don't know why Mark Cuban and the Dallas Mavericks wouldn't do all they can to get one more game, you know, one more game wherever it is to see what Kyrie and Luka could do. because you just made that damn trade. You just gave up so much to make that. So I just thought that was very interesting that I want to touch on. Bad news for the Clippers. Paul George, per Shams Charania of The Athletic, Clipper star Paul George is expected to be sidelined to begin the first round playoff series against the Suns, but is making some tangible progress from his March 21st knee injury. I'm going to start off with Nick as the half Clippers fan because of Russell Westbrook on being on the roster. I know there's rumors and speculation. Most likely he'll be back for Game 3. So you got a split in Phoenix. Well, how do you feel about this as a, you know, now Clippers fan?
I feel great about it.
I'm not the injury, obviously, but
I feel great about them winning the game. I mean, I think that they'll split it for sure. And then if they don't, they still have two games to win at home with Paul George. I'm not concerned about this series whatsoever. Yeah, it's Kevin Durant and Devin Booker, but I'm still not worried about it. I have the utmost confidence in Kawhi Leonard and Westbrook, especially Westbrook as of late. The stats speak for themselves as a Clipper. So,
how about you, Jamie? First two games without Paul George. That's not an easy task. As much as Nick is confident after that, those first two games, if you lose both of those, it's going to be very hard to climb yourself back.
We were talking about this earlier today while we were eating lunch, and I don't know. I think it's just going to be tough guarding somebody like Devin Booker without Paul George at that two-guard position. I don't know, because then you still have Chris Paul to go out there and facilitate. I'm not saying he's going to score, but as a facilitator. Because then if you have Westbrook guarding Devin Booker, then your team just gets smaller. So I just think it'll be tough. I could see them definitely getting dropped hard in one of them, but coming back. I could see them losing game one by a good amount and then coming back game two and revamping everything to acclimate.
I see that happening.
And then game three is when it really picks up.
Yeah.
Moving on to a good amount of Grizzlies news. Steven Adams will miss the postseason. He had a PCL sprain back in January. We talked about that back in January when it happened. Old news, but I wanted to bring it up because now it's official. He will be out for the entire playoffs. What's this mean for a Grizzlies team that is on the hunt to not just win the first round, not just win the second round, not just get to the Western Conference Finals, but compete for a championship, and you're without your starting center? Now, in my opinion, I think Triple J has proved himself to be that defensive anchor, and I think they'll honestly move on from Steven Adams this summer or just let his contract ride out, whatever it may be. But Nick and Jamie, what's your take on really at this point? I mean, you lost your starting center. Again, there's guys like Xavier Tillman who has stepped up. What do you guys think?
I mean, it's tough because Steven Adams isn't only just a player. He's also a leader to that locker room. We saw what happened with the whole John Morant situation. And one of the first stories that came out was Steven Adams tried to be the leader of that locker room and tell everybody to calm down. This will blow over, yada, yada, yada. So it's not like you're just losing a player because Steven Adams isn't all that. It's not what he used to be on Oklahoma City. He's a leader and he's a veteran. So, I mean, without that presence, it's going to be tough.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with the presence, but I don't think that they're losing too much. I really liked how Xavier Tillman stepped up. Santi Aldama, he stepped up. I like how everybody stepped up. Luke Kennard has been looking really nice, so I'm not too concerned for them. Jaren Jackson Jr. is the Defensive Player of the Year, so I'm not worried.
Along with this news with Steven Adams, to clear up a roster spot, the Memphis Grizzlies have waived rookie guard Kennedy Chandler. I believe went to Tennessee, if I'm correct.
It was an orange school.
Yeah, I believe it was
Tennessee.
Yeah, I believe it was Tennessee. I remember him back in college. But this is honestly not huge news, but definitely, you know, I thought it was going to be actually a future bench piece to this team. Apparently not. But they did sign big man Kenneth Lofton Jr., who was in their G League, the Memphis Hustle. I think it's the Memphis Hustle, something like that. I know it's Hustle. I'm not exactly sure if it's Memphis Hustle. Besides the point, he landed a new 4-year deal with the Grizzlies, and last night he put up 20-something points. It might have even been 40.
No, it was 42 and 14.
42, right.
Off of 17 for 25 shooting. So
I should know.
He had a fantastic game in his first ever game in the NBA. So Lofton definitely earned his spot because even though he was only playing a game.
It wasn't his first game in the NBA. It's just his first time since the contract.
Yeah, it's his shoot, you made me forget. He was playing against a team that was sitting their starters. I know that. So he wasn't playing against starters or anything like that. But to score 42 in your debut, pretty much, that's a big deal. So I think they're going to get a lot out of Kenny Lofton, even though they lost Steven Adams.
I agree. There's definitely I was confused by the way, but then since they signed Kenny Lofton, and it was 42, because I should know. I'm the one that reposts the stuff on the Instagram. But anyways, moving on to the Lakers. I'm interested to see what Nick's takes are on this, because he's so negative towards the Lakers, especially since the Westbrook stuff, so I'm interested to hear this. But anyways, the Lakers are signing two players for their postseason roster, that being Shaq Harrison, a defensive-minded point guard, and then this one here. The man's been on NBA Today for the past 3 months. You know, he's LeBron's buddy next door. He probably has a house at LeBron's house. Tristan Thompson, veteran center who have obviously playoff and championship experience with LeBron James back in Cleveland. Nick, what's your take on? Yeah, you can talk a little bit about Shaq Harrison, but I'm really interested to talk about Tristan Thompson.
I don't know what it's going to necessarily do for them. I mean, they already have Mo Bamba. They already have Vando. They have AD. There's not much space for him. I think they just have him in the locker room.
They just want him to get a ring.
Locker room presence because he has a championship.
And I don't know about winning a ring. Not them. Shaq Harrison, he was on the Blazers a couple of days ago when the Clippers played him, and he actually played pretty good. Defense on Eric Gordon, Norm Powell, a lot of those off-ball guards. So I think that could be actually a pretty decent signing for them, but I already know how Darwin Ham is. He's not going to touch the court. So.
Any takes on that?
I mean, I don't really have much to say. I think Nick hit all the spots.
After 5 seasons as the Pistons head coach, and it feels like yesterday Dwayne Casey was the Raptors coach, but he's been on the Pistons as their head coach for 5 seasons, so basically just 5 years, which is crazy. He will now be stepping down as head coach and moving to a front office role with the Pistons. So technically not fired, stepping down, moving to a front office thing. Actually a lot like Brad Stevens. Didn't get fired, but is stepping down and moving to the front office. But he's in his mid-60s, so he's getting old. He's not like a Greg Popovich that is a 5-time-plus champion, one of the best coaches of all time. He's going to stay there till he dies. No, not in Dwayne Casey's case. He's mid-60s, so I understand why he wants to step away and do something a little lighter on the mind. But with that said, Dwayne Casey is stepping down, and there's some candidates. Charles Lee, Bucks assistant coach right now. Raptors assistant Adrian Griffin. Of course, former Boston Celtics head coach Ime Udoka. And Heat assistant Chris Quinn, among others, of course. Sources tell Adrian Wojnarowski and ESPN. Now, out of all these guys, Ime Udoka obviously sticks out the most. Do you think he can mess with these young guys and actually be this coach that can, you know, eventually lead to championships in Detroit?
Maybe, because I don't know if they get Ime only because there's a lot of teams in pursuit of him, I've heard. So if
the
they
next
don't,
team we talk about is,
I see Adrian Griffin because he was a player that played for them.
I can so see I Charles that, Lee, too.
That's what I think is happening, either that or it's going to be Nate McMillan.
That's another good one,
that
too.
That would be bad.
I think there's just too much of a market for Ime. I think there's a lot of teams who will go after him. So if they don't get him, they have some good candidates here.
I agree. Then moving on to another team that is coachless as of now. After 3 seasons as the Rockets head coach, Steven Silas has, this is not just a moving of roles, he has been terminated. He has been fired from his job as the head coach of the Houston Rockets. They decide to decline his 4th year option for being head coach. Some other candidates, again, Ime Udoka. Some different ones, though. Golden State Warriors assistant coach, former Nets head coach Kenny Atkinson. I like that one. Former Lakers head coach of that championship bubble team, Frank Vogel. And this one's interesting. And this is from Woj. So this is a source. This is valid information. If the Raptors coach, Nick Nurse, I never really thought he'd be on the hot seat, becomes available, he'll be a serious consideration, too. What's your take on Nick Nurse? I mean, that's very interesting. Kenny Atkinson, I see. He's been looking for a new head coaching job ever since signing with the Warriors post-Brooklyn. Frank Vogel, I get it. Obviously, championship coach. Now doesn't have a job right now, I believe. But then there's Nick Nurse, who is a championship coach, yes. But I thought he was going to be up with the Raptors for the long haul. Maybe not.
I don't know why they would get rid of him, only because he's such a good defensive coach, and he's a former coach of the year. So there's a lot of pedigree behind him, and I'm not sure why you would just let somebody like that go for free, basically. So I'm not sure what the Raptors are thinking, because they've been good for the entire time he's been head coach. So, I mean, hopefully they don't get rid of him and they go for somebody like Kenny Atkinson. I think that would be a good signing.
I saw a graphic for the Rockets that had Frank Vogel as the coach, James Harden as the point guard, Jalen Green as the shooting guard, Jaylen Brown as a small forward, Jabari Smith Jr. as a power forward, and Victor Wembanyama as a center. So
that's a championship team.
What I think is going to happen.
You think Jalen Brown's going to rock?
Yeah.
That'd be crazy.
You're talking crazy just for fun.
It should get Udoka. That would bring Jalen Brown over.
Yeah, they don't like him.
No, they don't like him?
No, not they don't like him. I just think that I think there's nothing crazy there.
I mean,
like, obviously there's a relationship, but I don't think
he'd be the number one guy out there. That'd be his team. James Harden's a facilitator nowadays, so.
I think there's going to be too many butting of the minds for Jalen Brown. Because you got Jalen Green who wants the ball, James Harden who wants the ball, Victor Wembanyama who's supposed to be the next go, and then there's Jalen Brown. I think Jalen Brown's going to become like second fiddle again.
Nah, no way. Not behind Harden or Green. Maybe Wembanyama.
I know that's just a conspiracy over there by Nick, but
I don't know. That'd be crazy though.
That is definitely one of the crazier takes we've heard on this podcast. But moving on to one of our last pieces of news. The Timberwolves basically just imploded yesterday, and it continued today. So let me break this down for everyone. ESPN and Adrian Wojnarowski tells the people, Minnesota's Rudy Gobert escalated a verbal argument to a physical encounter that we all saw on national TV with after Kyle Anderson told him to shut the F up. You can finish the rest. The disagreement started with Anderson telling Gobert to block some shots, Gobert telling him to grab a rebound, and ended with a punch to Kyle Anderson. Down the line, it continues. Rudy Gobert tweeted an apology tweet. I'll read it real quick. Emotions got the best of me today. I should not have reacted the way I did. Regardless of what was said, I want to apologize to the fans, the organization, and particularly to Kyle Anderson, the guy he punched, his teammate, who is someone that I truly love and respect as a teammate. Now, that could just be BS. I truly love and respect as a teammate, but hey, he apologized. That's all that matters. All that matters. And the story continues, like I said. Post the game, walking out, their star, power forward, you know, up-and-coming star, definitely the defensive anchor on the roster, because we know Rudy Gobert ain't doing that anymore. Jaden McDaniels decides to punch a wall. This was also on TV, recorded for the people to see. And it turns out he broke his hand. Fractured his hand. Talk about implosion. Oh, and the story gets even better. As of 12:30 p.m. today, on Monday, Rudy Gobert has been suspended for their play-in game tomorrow against the Lakers. So their playoff lives are on the line. Granted, if they have to lose two games, so if they lose tomorrow, it's not the end of the world, but definitely not an easy road. Jaden McDaniels decides to punch the wall for whatever reason. And on top of that, there's a stat. This is from Adrian Wojnarowski. In the 2022-2023 season, All-Stars, Jaden McDaniels has guarded LeBron at least 1,000 times. He's done it the best out of all 1,000 times he's guarded LeBron James. Out of anyone in the league. That's basically what that tweet said. I was just trying to read it on the fly. So not only do you lose your best defensive player against LeBron because he stupidly punched the wall and broke his hand, you lose Rudy Gobert. The team's in turmoil because Kyle Anderson called Rudy Gobert a B.I., blah, blah, blah. You can finish the rest. He gets punched. Craziness in Minnesota.
There was also a clip that came out after the game of somebody recording the locker room after the game, and Kyle Anderson was talking to somebody,
yes.
And he said a bunch of bad words, and then at the end he said, "You have a decision to make this summer. It's me or him."
I did see that.
So he's putting a lot of pressure on the Timberwolves and beyond. So I'm not sure what they go with here because Rudy Gobert looks like he's kind of ruined the Timberwolves swagger that they had.
You can't move
on
that contract of Gobert.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. You can't really move that. So it's gonna be tough.
Nick, what's your take on this craziness going on?
It's all
within like 20 hours. Not even 24 hours yet.
It's just a toxic situation that it started with Rudy Gobert. Obviously, he's just, in my opinion, he's just a guy that needs his contract bought out, and
it's not gonna happen.
Just needs to.
It's too big.
Something needs to happen. I don't know. We'll see what happens though. He's just a very toxic guy. He started COVID, so you know.
In the NBA,
he's just
started rubbing all the mics.
I don't know. It's a weird situation, though.
Moving on to our FCP end of the season award show. Nick, I'm just going to break down what we picked back in November, and then we'll start off with you with today's picks, obviously, as the season has concluded. But I just want to touch on what we picked back 2 weeks basically into the season, back in early November, November 9th to be exact. This is what the FCP boys picked as their coach of the year, most improved player, sixth man of the year, defensive player of the year, and MVP. This is what the boys said. Starting off with Nick, he said the coach of the year was J.B. Bickerstaff of the Cleveland Cavaliers. Interesting. He said the most improved player was Tyrese Maxey. I could see it at the time. He was balling out at the time. This was 2 weeks into the season. He said his sixth man of the year was Russell Westbrook. Again, a valid answer. So, you know, a few weeks into the season, he was definitely one of the leading candidates. Defensive player of the year was Giannis. Again, valid point. Looking at it a few weeks into the season.
This was before Jaren came back, too.
Exactly. And before Brook Lopez really was on the scene or other guys like that. MVP, I love this one particularly. Jason Tatum, I remember that one vividly because I was hype. Nick said that. Moving on to myself, I said coach of the year was Will Hardy. The Jazz were 9-3 at the time of this on November 9th. They were looking like a surprisingly good team. I don't think anyone thought they were going to hold up to this. They certainly didn't. They didn't even make the play-in. But I thought they'd at least be like a top six team the way the year started, way Will Hardy was coaching this roster. I believe in my mind he is still a top five candidate for coach of the year just based off what he did for this team. Everyone thought they were going to be like 11, you know, the 15th seed. They just got rid of Gobert. They got rid of Donovan Mitchell. But no, they still held their own, and they just missed it at the 12th seed. Most Improved, I had Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I believe that one might still hold up. Everyone, we'll see. Sixth Man of the Year, B-Math, Benedict Mathurin at the time, who was averaging like 20 points per game off the bench while being in the running for Rookie of the Year, but who beat him out, in our opinion, on November 9th. That was Paolo Banchero. Defensive Player of the Year, I had Giannis Antetokounmpo. And for my MVP, I also had Giannis Antetokounmpo. Moving on to Jamie, his Coach of the Year was also, just like myself, Will Hardy. His Most Improved, a lot like myself, also Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Will that one hold up? We'll see. Sixth Man of the Year was, this one's different, Jordan Poole. No one said Jordan Poole besides Jamie. Rookie of the Year, a lot of the same with that one. That was Paolo Banchero. Defensive Player of the Year was Giannis Antetokounmpo. And MVP, we all had different MVPs. Luka Doncic for Mr. Jamie Martinez. And Nick, you didn't have a Rookie of the Year. I couldn't find it. Looking back at our show archives, I'm sure you said Paolo Banchero as well, because yeah. I don't know. Either him or B-Math. But with that said, Nick, let's get into our end of the season. We're probably going to do this 4 years in a row. We got, you know, three more years of college left. Our first ever FCP End of the Season Awards. Let's start it off, Nick, with what award?
Coach of the Year award for me. I have two people that I really heavily considered, but I'm going to start off with just a guy that I think should get a lot of notice, but it's just not going to happen. He's probably not even in the top five. It's Mark Denault, the Thunder's head coach. He's a great head coach. He reminds me a lot of Scott Brooks, just because he's just a good coach with a very similar system. But for me, it's between Ty Lue and Taylor Jenkins of the Memphis Grizzlies. But I'm going to have to lean towards Taylor Jenkins just because he's been able to hold that locker room down through all the stuff that happened. When Ja Morant got suspended, it looked like they were spiraling down. They could have spiraled all the way down to the fifth seed, but he was able to keep them afloat with all the injuries they had as well. And I think that the award should be his for sure.
Moving on for my Coach of the Year, and I just did one for each because it's the final. There's no problem with doing honorable mentions. Honestly, that's a good thing, better for the listeners. But for me, I just wanted to make it finalized as the season has concluded. Mike Brown of the Sacramento Kings. I think he's got to win it. I think he will win it. This team basically did a three. I was talking about this in the car with the guys on the way over here. They basically did a 360-degree turn this season, Jamie's Sacramento Kings. They went from 30 to 52. Hiring Mike Brown, obviously it's not all him. They got some good talent, but he is the driving engine of this team. He is a fantastic coach. I think everyone knew this going to the job. We just had to see it, you know, happen in real life, and it did. To 48-34 on the season, basically a 360-degree flip. If you want to be technical, we'll say a 340-degree flip. Not quite a 360, but basically there. He became the second Sacramento Kings coach ever to reach more than 40 wins. Only team in the West, this one I really liked, only team in the Western Conference with a record above 500 on the road. Every other team in the Western Conference has a losing record on the road besides the Sacramento Kings. That's a fantastic job by Mike Brown. I believe the away record, that's a lot on him being that, you know, voice in the locker room. What are you going to say, Nick?
The Clippers also have a over 500 record on the road. They're 21-20.
I don't know about that.
They are.
I was just looking at it.
I swear they are. Go look. They're 21-20.
You go look while Nick Jamie goes does his Coach of the Year.
All right, so my Coach of the Year should be obvious. It's Mike Brown of the Sacramento Kings. No bias. He has been absolutely fantastic for Sacramento, leading them to one of the best road records in the NBA, as well as one of the highest-rated offenses in NBA history, which is pretty crazy considering he was a defensive-minded head coach coming in. He comes in, our defense was pretty lackluster, but our offense was something different. De'Aaron Fox, he played it like De'Aaron Fox. Sabonis was a monster. Malik Monk, Kevin Huerter, a lot of these guys completely improved their careers because of Mike Brown. So I think for what he did for the Kings organization, completely snapping that 16-year playoff drought, I think he has to be Coach of the Year, no doubt.
Mm-hmm. Was yesterday's game in Phoenix?
I think, yeah, it was.
Okay, that's why. Because when I did this, it was Mike Brown. Mike Brown was the only team, and the Kings were the only team. But since they won yesterday in Phoenix, they went from 20-20 to 21-20.
I think the Kings still have a higher.
Oh, by far. The Kings actually have like a very good winning record on the road. The Clippers are 21-20. Yeah. So as of today, you're right. But when I did this now.
Moving on to the Most Improved Player of the Year. For my honorable mention, I'll give Lauri Markkanen some sort of I mean, he improved a lot from
I definitely agree.
You know, bench player to all-star. But for me, nobody's gonna have the same guy as me. It's Mikal Bridges, though. He goes from like 14 points per game on the Suns, and then he comes over to Brooklyn and is turning into an all-star, 21 points per game. He's the number one option. They look like they're gonna fall out of the playoffs, and then he has them in the playoffs. And I think they could take a couple games on the Sixers. They can make it go to 7 games just because of how good he is. I think he's an all-star next season.
My only argument to that is it's a full season award.
I mean, even prior to this, he went from 14 to like 19.
No, I know. I just think he really turned it up exponentially. Definitely when he was went to Brooklyn, he was like the number one guy. So that's why I got to do my boy Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, which I think is a no-brainer. I mean, I understand Nick's points, but not, you know, Mikal Bridges didn't go from 24.5 points per game up to almost 32 points per game. He didn't. Mikal had a good jump, but I don't think it's worthy of MIP. Definitely an honorable mention, so I can throw him in there as an honorable mention. But I got to give it to my boy Shai Gilgeous-Alexander of the Oklahoma City Thunder. Like I said, not only is he the main reason OKC is in the play-in, he took the biggest jump this season from a below-end star, definitely not a bum, like a Lauri Markkanen was last year. He just completely imploded from Chicago to Cleveland. He had a very bad year and then became a superstar this year. Not like that. Shai was a star, but he became into a superstar and a face of a franchise. Not just a star, he became a face of a franchise. Solidified face of the franchise, went up from 24.5 points per game.
Face of the franchise is kind of crazy.
No, it's not. What do you
Russell
think of OKC?
Westbrook. When I think OKC, I think Westbrook.
I'm talking about right now. Like, not the face of an all-time franchise. Face of the team right now. Russell Westbrook's not on the Thunder right now.
Josh Giddey.
Yeah.
You're crazy. But you know what I mean? I'm talking about the face of the franchise right now. Obviously, Westbrook's like, when you think of Thunder, you think of Westbrook or KD, obviously. But I'm talking about the face of the franchise right now. That's Shai Gilgeous-Alexander without a question. That's not even, when you think of the Kings, who do you think of? De'Aaron Fox.
Weber.
Okay. Well, De'Aaron Fox. Okay, stop clowning around. It's not even close. 24.5 points per game, all the way up to almost 32 points per game. His shooting got better. Everything got better. He's got to be MIP.
Alex said, think of a king, and Alex Len came to mind immediately. So, I actually have a different route than both of you guys. Nick gave him a shout-out. I'm going Lauri Markkanen. Just because he went from a bench player, like, I have to acknowledge Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I don't hate him at any standpoint. He's actually one of my favorite players in the league. I love SGA. It's just he was a 25 points per game scorer last year, whereas Lauri Markkanen was coming off the bench last year. Markkanen goes from 15 points a game to 26. He has his career high in rebounds, three-point percentage, field goal percentage. He has been absolutely fantastic for the Utah Jazz, being a first-time All-Star. So I do believe he is deserving of that award. If I were to – it's definitely between SGA and Lauri Markkanen, but I had to give Lauri his flowers because he has to go serve in the military now, so I had to give him something.
I just think it's harder to go – and you guys can give your own take on this. I think it's harder to go from – 25 points to then jump to that 30 level and do it for a whole season than it is to go from 16 to 26 points per game. It's neither of it's easy.
I mean, it's hard when you're coming off the bench the year before and then you go into a starting role.
Well, I think that makes it easier. I think that makes it easier.
It's a transition.
No, because he was a starter in Chicago for 4 years. It's not a transition.
Yeah, but he wasn't the year before.
But I think it's easier to jump up from 16 to 25 points per game. Okay, but I think it's easier to come off the bench and then get the ball in your hands more and jump up.
A really bad team, too.
But I don't know. I just think it's easier to do it the way Lauri did it.
Yeah, all right. Moving on to the Rookie of the Year, though. This is he should be the first unanimous Rookie of the Year. It's my Italian brother.
Let's say,
Paolo Banchero.
Keegan Murray.
Obviously Paolo Banchero. Yeah. He's probably the best. If he does not have the best rookie season of all time, it's LeBron. But it should be him, I think. He's had the best rookie season of all time. He's one of the first guys of all time to ever have 20, average 27-4. So that was an insane rookie campaign for him.
I definitely got to go with J.D. Davidson. No, I'm kidding. I got to go with Paolo Banchero as well. My only knock on him is that the first half of the season, game was flawless. Second half of the season, his three-point percentage tanked to then giving him a season three-point percentage of under 30%. If you're going to be a star in this league, in the modern NBA, that three-point percentage got to be – it doesn't have to be amazing. You don't got to shoot Steph Curry. You don't got to shoot – I'll give him his flowers. You don't got to shoot like Kevin Huerter. But you do got to shoot relatively well, and under 30% is just not it. So, again – Nick said his stats, 27-4, amazing for a rookie. He should be one of the first unanimous rookies of all time. But the three-point percentage has got to be better. And to be a star in this league, it's got to be 31-32 to even be questioned a star.
Yeah, no, this one's going to be a unanimous Paolo Banchero. He's been absolutely fantastic this season. But I do want to give some flowers to Keegan Murray. Yeah, Kings bias, whatever. But he did have one of the greatest shooting rookie years ever. He made 200-plus threes. He's the only rookie to make 200 or more threes on 50% or higher field goal, or 3-point percent, or no, 40% 3-point percentage. It's the only rookie to ever do that. He holds the rookie record for most threes in a season and highest percentage. So Keegan Murray had an absolutely fantastic season, and it was a big reason for the Kings being where they are today. So I had to give him his flowers, but Banchero, he's already a star in this league. He's going to be a superstar in the years to come. So I had to give his recognition.
moving on to the Clutch Player of the Year award, I do want to give some love to LeBron James. He is now leads the NBA all-time in most clutch shots, with Kobe Bryant and Russell Westbrook right behind him for that. So, you know, LeBron James is one of the most clutch players, if not the most clutch player of all time. But for this season, it was unanimously De'Aaron Fox. I remember watching a lot of games, him just knocking down that mid-range shot to, you know, put a lead on him, or, you know, whatever. Whatever the case was, De'Aaron Fox was the most clutch player this season by a landslide. So
I'm not sure how the NBA media and all the other people that vote on these awards vote. I think the only way you can vote is going to stats and seeing who scores the most clutch points. When I did my research originally, I thought it was Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and Jamie was like, hell no! It wasn't him, because I was looking at the stats back in December. I really wanted to put Shai, one of my favorite players in the league. But no, I gotta be real, and I did some further digging, and obviously it's De'Aaron Fox, as Nick just said. He leads the NBA in clutch points. He had a fantastic season in the clutch, and I think that's the only way this award can be given out, is just going to the stats and seeing who scored the most clutch points that led to wins, and that is De'Aaron Fox. Not too much of an argument.
Yeah, no, it's De'Aaron Fox far and away. He has scored, I believe, 194 clutch points this season, which is 35 more than second place, that being DeMar DeRozan. He's also done it on 53% field goal percentage and 32% from three. There's just been many times this season where I've seen that man go off. He had the half-court buzzer beater to win against the Magic. He had a very clutch game against Houston a few games ago. And then obviously the Clippers games, especially the one where he went to double overtime and it was 170 to 170 at one point. Fox turned up and hit a clutch mid-range to seal the game. So De'Aaron Fox, time in and time out, has been the guy to go to for Sacramento, and I think he will win this award unanimously.
Yeah. That is a pretty unanimous award. Next up is the Sixth Man of the Year. You know, I do want to just, you know, mention the fact that if Russell Westbrook would have stayed on the bench, this would be his award, but that's all right. For me, it's Emmanuel Quickly. You know, he's played so amazing off the bench. Earlier, if you would have asked me a week ago, I would have said Malcolm Brogdon, but right now, after the last week or two of basketball, it's Emmanuel Quickly.
It's a season award.
I mean, the whole season he's been good, but I'm saying for right now, he's overcame my interest for that, so.
I got to still give it to my boy Malcolm Brogdon. He started how many? Zero games this entire season. He started zero games this entire season. He's one of the most selfless players in the league. He could start on, I'd say, 20 to 25 of the 30 teams in the NBA. Am I wrong?
What?
He could start on most teams in the NBA. More than half the teams in the NBA, he could be their starting point guard or shooting guard easily, without a doubt. But he came to Boston, got traded to Boston, but this is the destination he wanted to come to. Since his first two seasons of his career as a starter on the Bucks, he only didn't start, his first two seasons on the Bucks, and then when he signed that big contract with the Pacers, he was that 1-2 option on those playoff Pacer teams. And now he's coming off the bench. He got to be a unanimous Sixth Man of the Year, averaging 15 points per game, almost 4.5 rebounds, 4 assists, shooting almost 50%, shooting almost 45% from 3. That's one of the highest in the NBA. Was the highest in the NBA for a very long time. 87% from the line. Effective field goal percentage of almost 58%. He does it all for the Boston Celtics as the Sixth Man. Again, starting zero games. This is a man, 2-3 years ago, was that 1-2 option with Victor Oladipo on those Pacer playoff teams. This is not just some random guy like a Lou Will, who was a bench, career bench player. Again, Malcolm Brogdon, first 2 years in the NBA, second round pick, won Rookie of the Year. But he was off the bench the first 2 years. He started a few years with Milwaukee, got that big bag on the Pacers, was their star in Indiana. Coming here to Boston, he is the Sixth Man of the Year because he's doing all what he did as a starter. Not as many points, but he does it all, and he's coming off the bench.
All right, so this was a really tough decision between Brogdon and Quickly. But I have to go with Nick here. I mean, no hate to Malcolm Brogdon. He was a machine in Indiana. I love that dude in Indiana. Yeah. But for the last few weeks of basketball, man,
it's a season award, though. That's just BS.
But, like, Nikola Jokic was MVP for a good portion of the season, but it wasn't until the last week or two where Joel Embiid took it. I think it's the same case here. Emmanuel Quickly just took it in the last couple of weeks of play. So, yes, it's a season award, but the season lasts another, like, it's an 81 season game. And
let's see how many games Emmanuel Quickly started.
He started 21 out of the 81.
Okay, so you're still eligible.
Yeah, still eligible. But
Brogdon started zero.
15 points a game. He still played 81 games, but Brunson was hurt for a good amount of the season, so I think he just played fantastic, a career high in steals, and then 15 points a game off the bench, which is just really good. And then he scored his career high just a few nights ago at that 42, and he had 30 the other night. So I think he's just been fantastic. It's really 1A, 1B with Quickly and Brogdon, and I would not be surprised if like one takes it over the other. So
I think it's close.
I'm going to give it to Quickly just an edge, but I could no hate to Brogdon. That man's been fantastic this year, and I could see him taking the award too.
It's close. I can see it.
Moving on to the depoy, I got to take the Black Mamba, Jaren Jackson Jr. You know, he's modern-day Serge Ibaka, in my opinion, but with an amazing offensive game on top of that. He's an all-star player, the best defensive player in the NBA right now, if you ask me, by a far. He can guard anybody on the court except for probably about point. He could guard the 2 through 5 easily. So this is my depoy without a doubt.
The only reason why I did not pick Triple J, Jaren Jackson Jr., is because his time on the court this season. He didn't really come into the season until December. He only played 63 games this year. I got to give it to Brook Lopez. Brook Lopez has been off my radar for a while, but then I was looking at the stats over the weekend when I was coming up with my picks here, and I've just been kind of not really focusing on Brook Lopez too much. In his 15th season at 35 years old, so he's been in the league for years, he leads the NBA in total blocks at 169 and block percentage at 67.1. Lopez has contested the most shots at 1,162. That's 17.3 per game. Now, what the heck does that mean? Let me put it into perspective. The second place guy is Nick Claxton. Brook Lopez, again, it's actually out now up to, as the season actually ended, he's actually now up to 17.5. The second place is Nick Claxton at 12.1 blocks, attempted, you know, blocks, contested shots per game. Ivaka Zubac is at 11.4. So he's up, what's that, like 5 points total above Nick Claxton. That's insane. This man is 35 years old, 15th season, having his best season of his career by far. I think it's a no-brainer, Brook Lopez. Again, if you asked me this a month ago, I would have said Triple J, but then looking at it throughout the season, health, as Jamie says, what do you say?
Health is wealth.
Health is wealth, and also availability or it's something on
key.
The court. Or you say something about them being on the court.
I don't know. I forget things.
There's a phrase that Jamie always says that I'm blanking
on
right
now. I'm cold right now, so my mind is not the greatest.
Anyways, there's a phrase that Jamie always says about eligibility is like your best ability, something along those lines.
Availability is the best ability.
Thank you. So that's exactly what he says, and I got to agree. Got to give it to Brook Lopez. He has been the core anchor of this Bucks defense. Obviously, Giannis is always going to be up in conversations, but Brook Lopez has been really that anchor this season, so I got to give it to him.
Yeah, this was a really tough one to do. It was between the Black Mamba, Black Panther, or Brook Lopez, but availability is the best ability. I'm going to go Brook Lopez. He's 35 years old. He's been in the league for a long time, and he's the best defensive player in the NBA. It's him and Jaren right there, but at 35 years old, he played 78 games and started all 78, and he's still a block machine at that old age.
It's
crazy. He's what a lot of people don't know is he's the Brooklyn Nets all-time scorer, so I thought I'd throw that in there. But Lopez has been insane, and he's been a quintessential part of that Milwaukee Bucks first seed, so I'm sure Giannis Antetokounmpo agrees with this one. It's going to be Brook Lopez. It's Brook or Jaren. I think they'll give it to Jaren just because they see that 3 blocks a game. But I think it should be Brook. It's very close, though.
But yeah, they look at the records, too. Milwaukee's the best team in the league record-wise, so we'll see what happens.
We'll see.
Moving on to the MVP, and I'll just say I'm ready for some new candidates to be considered for the MVP. It's obviously Joel Embiid. I could see Giannis. I could not see Jokic. You know, the only argument he had was that he was averaging a triple-double, but, that didn't happen. So he ended the season third with 9.8 assist per game. So that he has no argument, if you ask me. So it's Joel Embiid.
Any other big reasons on that for Joel Embiid this season?
I mean, just because he hasn't won it. I mean, I feel like if Giannis hadn't won it, it'd be Giannis without a doubt. But I guess I'm going to give it to Joel because that's what I think is going to happen. But I would say Giannis deserves it the most.
Yeah, I got to go with Joel Embiid as well. And I think he actually deserves it. As I was doing research, I noticed that Jokic played 903 minutes more than Embiid in 2021 when there was a conversation as well. And then last year, there was also another conversation. And 179 more minutes in his MVP campaign in the following season, that being last year. But as of April 7th, Jokic has Embiid beat by only 42 minutes. So in the past years, availability is the best ability. Jokic beat Embiid on availability by a landslide the past two seasons as MVP years. But coming into this year, as the season has concluded, this was as of April 7th, so a few days ago, so basically it's going to be the same thing. Jokic only has Embiid beat by 42 minutes played. And that was actually the game that Embiid didn't play Jokic in, funny enough, when this stat came out. So they're basically neck and neck. And then obviously Embiid is averaging 33 points per game, the most points this season. 10 rebounds, 4 assists, 55% from the field, 33% from 3. All right, you want to say Jokic shoots a little bit better? Sure. But Embiid is a monster. You take Jokic off that Nuggets team, they're not going to be the first seed in the West, but I think they are still a top five seed in the West just because you have Jamal Murray, MPJ, who should be a lot better than he is, and you have good depth around him. You take Embiid off that team, they're still an 8 seed, but I think they're more the 8 seed closer than they are to the 5 seed. James Harden is not what he used to be. Definitely more of a passer, can still score. And Tyrese Maxey has flopped the second half of the season. And then, as Nick will be the first one to say, Tobias Harris is just a waste of cap space. So I think they'd be a lot worse without Embiid than the Nuggets would be without Jokic. Both superstars, both 1-2 centers in the league. Both should be 1-2 candidates for MVP. But I think it's time to move on from Jokic. I don't think he's earned 3 in a row. I think that's what it comes down to, Jamie, is that he should not be in that legacy of 3 in a row. I think it's time for Embiid to win MVP.
And I completely agree with the fact that Jokic should not be the one to go 3 straight MVPs. He's just not the guy to do it. I don't like his play style. But I'm not going Joel Embiid either. I'm going Giannis Antetokounmpo. I just think with the season he's having, it's just completely under the radar for somebody like Giannis, which is completely insane to me. Everybody's talking about Joel, which obviously he deserves to be talked about. He's probably going to win MVP. And then obviously Jokic is getting a lot of talk too. But I think for Giannis, for what he's doing and for their season and their record, he's just under the radar. Giannis is averaging a career high in points at 31.1. He also out-rebounds Joel Embiid by about a rebound and a half, a little over, actually. And Giannis, as a whole, has just been fantastic. I can't take it away from him. They're the best team in the NBA, and he has been the best player in the NBA for about 5-6
years
now.
More assists, too.
He has more assists as well. So, Antetokounmpo, he won't win MVP, and I think it's a travesty that he won't because they already gave him 2. So, I think it's a lot closer than people think it is, and I'm going to give it to Giannis. He's been fantastic.
Why do you think he's not talked about as much this year? Because it's definitely
on
the radar.
I just haven't seen any talk about it. He's having a fantastic season. They're the number one team in the NBA. It's weird. It's because he's probably won 2 MVPs in the past, and more people want to talk about Jokic because I think him winning an MVP would be much more controversial than it would be if Giannis were to win MVP. And I see a lot of people on Instagram comments talking about, oh, Giannis should be in this, Giannis should be in that, he should be an MVP candidate.
I don't think anyone
when they're
would
talking
hate.
About Jokic.
I don't think anyone would hate if Giannis got MVP.
No, I don't think anybody would either.
Guy.
I think more people would hate if Jokic did.
Oh, the world's going to blow up.
Yeah.
The world has got to burn. The NBA media world is going to burn if Jokic gets
MVP. Yeah, so I'm going to give it to Giannis. I got to show him the love he deserves.
I like, definitely under the radar. Very interesting.
Yeah, it's insane for the guy he is and for the record they have. It is quite insane.
Any
but
closing takes on that one, Nick? Why do you think he just hasn't been talked about?
Just because of the reason of Embiid not having an MVP yet. That's what I would say for sure. It's just the fact that he does not have an MVP. So I think that they want to try to give him one since it's them three have been in the race for the last 4 years. So they just want to finally let him get one. He should have gotten one 2 years ago when they were the first seed in the East. But now he's the third seed in the East, closer to the fourth seed. So, you know, I don't know. I think it should have been his in 2020-2021. But
I mean, it is what it is. It's going to be a fun awards show to watch nonetheless. But that is all we have for you guys this week. And I want to say thank you all for tuning in to WVUA 90.7 FM and the Full Court Press Podcast. We're going to be back on Friday with our NBA playoff predictions because the playoffs start this Saturday, baby. Let's go. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at FCPPodcast_UA and on TikTok at FCP_podcast. This is Jamie, Alex, and Nick signing out.
Peace.
See you guys.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.